B-Pod Studios.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
And Mass.
You're not going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Celtics.
Yeah, I think they're a contender. They're second in the NBA in defense. They're the only team that has three players that average over 20. I don't get the deniers on this. I think Jason Tatum's the second best player in the East. Gordon Hayward could give you 22. Jaylen could give you 22. Jason Tatum could give you 32 on any night. So I think this is a real team. Kemba Walker could give you 22. There's no other team in the NBA. You have four guys that could give you over 20, and you would not be surprised. It wouldn't be a shocking performance for Jaylen Brown. I also think they have probably the best coach, he and Eric Spoelstra, in the East.
Fourth and final hour, Felger and Maz. So, buddy Colin Cowherd, Fox Sports 1, talking about the Celtics and the hierarchy of the league. He went through all the teams in the NBA playoffs or in the NBA invitation-only season that will continue in Orlando soon, hopefully, and identified everyone as a pretender or a contender. He identified the Celtics as a contender, and he says, Jason Tatum is the second-best player in the East right now. Jim Murray, do you agree?
No, he can get there, but for me right now, I still have Embiid ahead of him, and I know that would probably drive people crazy, and I'm not doing it to troll, because I'm not even the biggest fan of Embiid. I just think there's a higher ceiling, and just overall, because of the size and just his dominance, even though he's a slacker, I feel like, you know, six out of every ten games you'll actually watch him, I think he's just a more dominant player than Tatum is right now. The thing with Tatum that drives me nuts since he's coming to the league is his inconsistency. That started to go away before everything got shut down due to the pandemic. And he really started to look like a completely different player at the end of February. And he was playing more confidently, especially on both sides of the ball defensively. If you go back to that double overtime game against the Clippers, he was awesome against Kawhi Leonard. But that was a very small sample size. If I can see more of that, yeah, he will be number two. But for now, he's not to me.
So I still think Embiid has a higher upside, can dominate a game more than Tatum can.
Oh, he's sloppy, he's lethargic, but I don't know, if he gives even like a half of a rat's ass, he's just a more dominant player just because of his physical skills.
He's a force.
Yeah.
He is. He's a force, and potentially on both ends of the floor. I mean, he clogs up so much space around the basket. He makes the game completely different there on the interior. And the Celtics obviously don't have an answer for him. I don't care what anybody says. If Embiid wants to play, they can't stop him. But I do think Tatum's been the second-best player in the East this year, behind only Giannis. And look, a lot of what Cowherd says is right. I think there's a big gap between the top three teams in the NBA and the next bunch. I think the Celtics are in that next bunch. They might be at the top of the next bunch. But I don't think that really matters in that league. I think it's all about who's at the top. And yet, I would also tell you that with the circumstances being what they are, and no home court, teams in a bubble, 3 months off, that the Celtics have a better chance now to win than they would have otherwise. So let's continue with your calls. Again, we talked about this earlier, and it is worth discussing Jason Tatum's place in the hierarchy of the NBA, what that could mean here in the postseason. And let's not forget that part of the reason he is as high in the hierarchy of the Eastern Conference among the talent is because Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are out. So next year it might be different. This might be as good an opportunity as the Celtics are going to get here, at least in the short term. Dean's in Shrewsbury. Go ahead, Dean.
Well, a caller earlier was talking about Trae Young being better because of his offense, but they're nowhere near each other on the defensive end. Tatum's like near elite defensive player, and Young is just like a turnstile out there at point.
Yeah, so I don't know that I would say Tatum is near elite quite yet, but he's better. He's improved a lot this year. And Murray, I know that for you, that the difference in positions, the size of each player, makes a significant difference when you talk about their impact.
Yeah, I don't hold the guard position against them as much as you do, Maz, but in this case, I do. Like, a wing is always going to be more important to me. A guy who's 6'8", like Tatum is going to be more important than a smaller guard. He just is. And, you know, I love the play of someone like Steph Curry, but he's kind of an anomaly to me more than anything else. And Kyrie, when he tries, same thing. Kemba Walker, too. Like, the size thing, it still matters in the NBA. It does.
You know, we did play a little earlier in the program. We played a comment from Chris Sims, who has been unveiling his top 40 quarterbacks in the league, and listed Tom Brady as 15th best quarterback in the league, which I think is asinine. If you were looking at the landscape, and again, I respect Sims, but I also think that there's a Belichick connection there, there's a Patriots connection there, and all of a sudden now Tom Brady sucks. And I'm not telling you Brady played well the last couple of years, but Brady in Tampa, the 15th best quarterback in the league, I have a hard time believing that that's going to play out that way. Kevin and Quincy, what do you get on Brady?
Hey, Mads. Thanks for taking my call. First time caller, long time listener. Tom Brady and Gronk, same position. What happens if the NFL doesn't play this year? And what does that mean for Brady's future? You're talking rankings. What does he rank next year if he doesn't play this year? Thanks for taking my call.
So I'll tell you what, Kevin, that's an interesting question. I hadn't given a lot of thought to that because I think most of us believe that the NFL is going to play. It's the one league that, for whatever reason, feels completely invulnerable to everything, which is naive on our part. Right? Again, you have Anthony Fauci saying in The Last Day that unless the NFL is committed to a bubble type of setup, that he has a hard time seeing how they're going to be able to play football this fall. Now, maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong. Certainly, though, I think the NFL is preparing for the fact that they might not be able to play in September and then return in October. But I think we all operate under the premise that the season will be played. Murray, have you given any thought to the idea of what would happen for Brady if they don't play this season?
Nope, and I refuse to acknowledge it. We're playing football.
Downers, you don't even want to go there, Murray.
I don't, no. And Fauci can get stuff back in his locker and shut the hell up. We're playing football.
I think he's having a hard time with it, Maz.
No, I'm just over it. Like, oh, well, yeah, here comes the wet sausage in the wet blanket of a potential reality from him, and we haven't heard from him in months here. America's dad. Well, hold on a minute, guys. Can we wait till we get there? It's like even events getting canceled in 2021 already. Like, let's everybody calm down. Like, let's let it play out here in the summer and then see what happens. I'm under the impression that we're playing football, and I refuse to think otherwise.
I'll tell you, the idea of no football, now that is alarming. That is, I know we've been sounding bells for all of these sports for a while now, and we should, but the idea of no football, that's alarming. Wayne's in Grafton, our buddy Wayne, go ahead.
Yeah, I bet Teddy Ballgame's cryogenic head is spinning around right now. I mean, if he was around right now, I could picture him taking a Louisville Slugger and shoving it up of David Price's chamber. Maz, you're in hibernation. You got to get out and mingle, meet the people. How about I stop by with a 12-pack and we practice social distancing? Peace out.
Okay, so wait. I like the idea of a 12-pack. I am in seclusion. I've been working from home for a while now, Murray. I mean, what's it
and
been?
It's really been since like day one, hasn't it almost?
It's been a couple of months at least, right? Early to mid-March?
Yeah.
I think it was early to mid-March. April, May. So really, it's been 3 months. Wow, has it been that long? Holy crap. I didn't realize that.
Time has essentially become irrelevant at this point.
So now, I will say that I did want to come back into the office last week, but we are still doing a, what are we calling it, Murray? A soft reopen?
Yeah, that's putting
where,
it badly.
Yeah, where, you know, only so many people in the studio at one time and things of the like. So that's why I'm still working from home. Believe me when I tell you, as much as I, am paranoid and as, you know, whacked out in the head as I am, because I am, it's not because I'm terrified of going into work. I wanted to go in last week or a couple of weeks ago, but was told that for the time being, I should stay home until we are fully prepared to have everybody back into the studio. Because, Murray, as you know, that studio might as well be a Petri dish.
Yeah, no windows that open, a lot of people yelling,
yeah,
and spit coming out of the mouths right into the microphones that we're all using. If anyone's going to get it, this is the place to get it. So, thankfully,
yeah, and I don't need to tell you that I happen to share a workstation with one Scott Zolak, who to me is just an infection waiting to happen.
Naz, I'd stay home until 2025 in that scenario.
So I consider myself for that very fact, that simple fact, that I share the same seat as Zolak, who's obviously on the program right before us, on the Zolak and Bertrand midday show, just so they don't get pissed off because we didn't name them. I personally consider myself to be high risk to get the coronavirus because Zoe to me is just, he's an infection waiting to happen. 617-779-0985. Chris Sims on Brady. Chris Sims also had an interesting piece. Was it Chris Sims who had the information about Garoppolo? Jimmy, you got to help me out here.
Well, it was me first, and then Chris Sims like co-signed on it.
Okay, so Chris Sims had sort of further validation of the interest that the 49ers had in Tom Brady, and as it pertained to Jimmy Garoppolo, we'll touch on that next.
Tucker Pass. Sports. Boston's home for sports. 98.5. The Sports Hub.
You can listen to Felger and Mass on your phone with the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
Frankly, it's what we deserve. We're a nation of idiots.
Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I called a general manager, and he said, oh, yeah, it was on the table. For like 48 hours. I'm like, come on. He's like, no. It was on the table. This is a very tied-in guy. He's like, listen, it was on the table for 48 hours. And just think about the sports history that could have happened that didn't. Tom Brady goes to the best young offensive mind in football, excellent O-line, best young defensive front, and the next Gronk he's gotten George Kittle. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Tom Brady would be the Super Bowl favorite this morning. I mean, it would be Mahomes and Brady meeting again. That's what it would be for the next 3 years. Nothing against Lamar, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, but it would be Mahomes and Brady. Now, it didn't happen. And it would have been amazing, and it wouldn't have been awful for Jimmy Garoppolo. He could have gone to New England. That would have been a happy ending for everybody.
I know what you're thinking. Well, yeah, I heard that a long time ago. What's this all about? Why are you playing this again? Because Colin Cowherd said it yesterday, again, just kind of reaffirming the point that at one stage, the San Francisco 49ers were ready to bring in Tom Brady, and that Jimmy Garoppolo could have ended up with the Patriots. Murray, can you imagine how different things would be right now if that had actually unfolded that way? You, for one, would be pissed.
I would be, but I don't think people by and large here, Patriots fans, would be. It would be a happy ending in more ways than one, especially for you, Maz, if it all worked out that way. I would have liked it as a Brady Bobo because that team is stacked. The only thing that they are missing is a legitimate Super Bowl caliber quarterback. That was proven in last year's Super Bowl. So you add Brady to that mix, and with baby Gronk there, or off-brand Gronk and George Kittle, that offensive line, all those, all that talent that they got there, and the offensive mind of Kyle Shanahan, it'd be pretty ridiculous you add Brady to that mix. I believe what he says there. It's going to be them and the Chiefs basically going back and forth here for the next couple of years to be the next champion. And you get Garoppolo back here with a coach that I think can actually get the bad habits out of him with Bill Belichick. But now he's still there with Kyle Shanahan, who just signed an extension, and nothing's really going to change. It's probably going to get worse for him. Brady goes to Tampa. I wish him the best there. He's got some weapons. But the best landing spot for him, no ifs, ands, or buts about it, would have been the San Francisco 49ers.
See, now, Murray, I know that you think that the reason we played that is because I want to get my jollies here about the prospect of Garoppolo being back in New England, and that every time it comes up, I still sort of I get a little tingle in my shorts that, wow. Maybe it really came that close. And really, honestly, that is not the number one reason, or not the reason really I wanted to play it again. What an amazing story that would have been. Can you imagine if that actually had happened? For all the cockamamie calls we get, how many times have we heard, Brady's going to go back to San Francisco and Garoppolo's coming back to the Pats. Do you know how many times we dumped on that?
I mean, it happened, Maz, as soon as the trade happened with Garoppolo.
Oh, and we dumped all over it. That's the part that I find stunning, is that it actually was discussed. There was a chance that it could have happened. Brady wanted to go back to the Niners, and ultimately San Francisco chose no. Now, the way Cowherd talked about it, says it was on the table, almost makes it sound like it was a trade, that it was up for discussion, that there was an offer out there. It wasn't a trade, obviously, because Brady was a free agent. Sure. The Patriots couldn't franchise him. It wasn't as it pertained to Brady. It would have been potentially a trade with Garoppolo, although the Niners could have gotten out of that contract too. But for all of the crazy crap that callers throw out there for trades, and this was one that, again, we would have laughed in the face of a caller if they offered that up, and it was actually discussed at one point. It was discussed. McCarthy, where are you on Garoppolo?
I think he's a legitimate NFL quarterback. I mean, I don't know. Listen, I'm kind of in between you and Murray on this. I know you love Garoppolo with all your heart, Maz. I know Jim, you know, hates him with a burning, raging passion.
No, I'm just right about him is all.
I think he's a legitimate NFL quarterback. 12th, 13th, wherever you want to put him in the league, or that's his ceiling, top 10, maybe. I don't know. I think you could win with him, though, if you built a really good team around him. And he had good coaching in Bill Belichick, because I think Kyle Shanahan is absolutely going to hold him back there, because we know Kyle Shanahan is the Super Bowl. I can't use the term that I was going to use, but we all know who Kyle Shanahan is. So,
Joker?
Yeah.
Is Joker. That the word?
Yeah, I was going to use something a little more strong that I can't use.
Well, we can use Joker.
Yeah.
Mark's in Providence on the return of baseball. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I'm a little biased because baseball is probably my favorite sport. But I think what the thing that has beaten this game up is the quality of play. And I think the shift is killing it. And I was wondering what you thought about that, the shift, Maz. Because
I hate it.
You don't see a lot of skilled plays in the field like you used to, because everything's like a ground ball straight to the guy. So I'll listen to what you have to say, Maz.
So I'll tell you what, Mark, I'm glad you brought this up, because this crossed my mind. I hate the shift with a passion. I despise the shift. I think it needs to be legislated out of the game, because frankly, everybody's doing it. It's one of the reasons the sport's getting killed. So to me, it needs to be legislated out, because teams are just going to continue to do it. And it did. It occurred to me, this is like, it feels anyway, like you don't see great plays in the infield with the same frequency you did before. We talk about a lack of action. How about the great defensive play? And you know why we don't see them in the infield? Because there's a player over there and the ball's hit right to him, and range is not as much of a factor, and guy doesn't have to dive to knock it down. Or there's just, and I'm not saying that the great defensive play doesn't exist in the infield, but on the right side, you don't get many of them. You don't get many. I'd love to see some sort of statistical analysis on that as to how much the shift has cut down on the number of, you know, plays that we would deem to be highlight reel plays on the right side of the infield. Neil is in Rockland. Go ahead, Neil.
Yeah, most Americans that are out of work are dying to get back to work. And you got these spoiled millionaires arguing over games and a few dollars. If I was the owners, I'd go, look it, here's when we're going back to work. You show up. If you don't, we're going to play the AAA players. Because I think most people just want to see baseball.
Yeah, Neil, would you watch replacement players?
Yeah.
That didn't sound like a convincing answer, Neil.
That sounded like a spite, yeah.
Murray, would you?
No, probably I wouldn't. Well, then again, would they let them bat flip and maybe it was like a little more fun, like how the KBO is, the Korean Baseball League? I might be apt to tune in just a little bit.
See, I'm not even going to ask McCarthy, because he's the guy who's sitting next to Roach at the Cape League game.
Oh, yeah. No, that's me. I'd watch Maz. I mean, but again, baseball's target audience, they don't have a problem getting me. They've got a problem getting everybody else.
Well, so that's the thing. It's like, you know, you're a junkie on the game, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not watching replacement players.
No.
It's part of the, you know, I want the reason sports appeal to me is because I'm seeing the best athletes in the world at what they do. So this is why the NFL, the NHL, the NBA, MLB, they're the best leagues in the world. It's part of the reason why I think MLS, now look, is never going to be a dominant force, because even if we do get into soccer, the American League is inferior to the Premier League and the European leagues. John's in the car. John, go.
Yeah, Tony, how are you? You know, you guys, both formally and I guess amongst the radio staff and the callers over the past 10, 12 weeks, have had quite a few polls relative to will you come back and watch MLB, will you not, or variations thereof. The one you haven't mentioned is, have you asked the question, if you play fantasy baseball, do you want to see the game come back? And if you would ask me that, I would say absolutely. I'm sickened by the length of baseball. I don't have any interest in the game, save the fact of fantasy baseball. And that gets me to watch the MLB channel and in the whole nine yards. And I think that is one factor that the game has going for it, that unlike football, I love football, I play fantasy football, but I'd watch football no matter what. But as far as baseball, if it wasn't for fantasy, wouldn't watch it.
So, John, I'll tell you what. I think the opposite. I think the opposite. I think fantasy baseball is purely for the guy who doesn't watch the game and just goes by the numbers. Like, I feel like the analytics people are fantasy baseball players. Maybe I'm off base here, but I feel like those are the ones that are kind of screwing the whole thing up. In Moneyball, Billy Beane, you know, when I'm going back a number of years, remove himself from watching games because he felt like it caused him too much anxiety and stress. But beyond that, he felt like it would distort the data and that the data ultimately is what mattered. So he didn't want to develop any sort of relationship, emotional attachment to players or what have you. And again, I'm putting words in his mouth there a little bit because I think the big thing was the stress of watching it. But this is why the data geeks say don't watch the games, just go by the data. The games skew your judgment. So I think most fantasy players would just rather get the numbers. That's just me. McCarthy, I don't know how you feel.
I think fantasy baseball is in some ways good for the sport because baseball lends itself to fantasy sports perhaps more than any other sport because it's so statistically driven. I just think that Major League Baseball, like, you know, their inability to market the players and their inability to, I don't know, take advantage of the fantasy world, say the way the NFL has done, I actually think it's hurt the sport and they haven't taken enough advantage.
I mean, I can tell you this, that I think most fantasy sports players, or the sport that draws the most fantasy interest, is football. Mm-hmm. Okay, football draws the most fantasy interest. And so I think if you were to ask the people at DraftKings, obviously a presenting sponsor here of the Felger Mass Show, I think that they would tell you that as far as the fantasy sports go, football is their biggest vehicle. And so I have a hard time connecting with the caller on that one. To me, I think that the people who play fantasy baseball are less apt to watch the games. Just my two cents. Cents, rather. McCarthy, had your headlines.
Colin Cowherd of Fox and Fox Sports.
Felger and Mass.
Best afternoon show in America.
Mike Felger.
Felger's a smart aleck.
Tony Maserati.
You know your baseball.
Felger and Mass.
You guys do a great show.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Looking mostly baseball today. Certainly have discussed some other things, NBA, a little bit of football. But with the MLB negotiations apparently picking up momentum and seemingly trending toward an agreement, we did get into some of the stuff, changes in the game, and specifically the proposal elements that will affect the game for years to come. For example, he said earlier, J.D. Martinez, designated hitter, he hits the market this offseason. He'll have 15 more teams, in theory, vying for his services if the designated hitter becomes a permanent fixture in the National League, and it sort of feels like it is headed that way. One thing I did want to get to, not related to baseball, related to the NFL. Murray, I know you had a thought on it as well, and I think Matt McCarthy did also. Joe Tooney, according to Burt Breer of Sports Illustrated, and this has been speculated in the past. I know there were some reports out there last week too, but I think it's worth touching on. Before we wrap it up here today, Joe Tooney, still unsigned by the Patriots as it pertains to a multi-year deal, and it is now worth mentioning that the deadline for the Patriots to sign Tooney, again, to a multi-year deal is July 15th. We're now inside of a month of that date. And if the Patriots do not have a multi-year agreement with Joe Tooney at that time, they can't sign him to a multi-year contract until after the season. Tooney would be set to become a free agent unless they franchise him again. And certainly it doesn't sound like, based on reports and information that is out there, that the Patriots and Tooney are any closer to a long-term deal. They've already placed the franchise tag on him for this year. And Murray, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't the salary for him something like $14
million
this coming season?
It's roughly $15 million, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big number for a guard. They're paying Shaq Mason well or high on the other side. I think they have the number one payroll in the league at the guard position. Tooney feels overpaid, as good as Greg Bedard might think he is. And I say that jokingly. Tooney's was a good player for them last year. I know Bedard loves him, so I like to bust Greg's balls about that. But recently, and this is what Burt Breer alluded to, the Philadelphia Eagles just lost guard Brandon Brooks, their right guard, who's been a Pro Bowler for three straight years. They lost him to an Achilles injury. He's done for the year. The Eagles had offensive line problems last year, Certainly, they have a lot invested in their quarterback and Carson Wentz. And in fact, Brooks was even named an All-Pro by Pro Football Focus. So again, All-Pro, Pro Bowl, different things. But here's a guy who is elite at his position. Now he plays the other side from Tooney. Tooney's a left guard. This guy's a right guard. But there's been speculation that the Eagles may be interested in Tooney. We know the Dolphins were interested in Tooney. He's being paid a lot of money. He does not have a multi-year deal. Would you, Murray, if those teams came calling, would you be willing to trade Joe Tooney?
No, I wouldn't. I think he's maybe the most consistent player on the team. He is. I mean, the guy never misses any games. And, you know, consistency, I think, is the most important thing on that offensive line that needs to be solid this year if this team's going to go anywhere or do anything, especially with a young quarterback. And I do believe it's going to be Stidham and not Suckbag Hoyer at quarterback. So you want some consistency up front, and he's the most important piece up front. And even if they can't get a long-term deal done with him, I don't do it. And looking at the Eagles' cap number, and I know the cap is crap and you can maneuver it, I just don't see how they could do it. I get it that they could extend him, but they only have $24 million in cap space looking at over the cap. And, you know, next year they're 50 in the hole with a cap next year. That could be, you know, so he kind of would have them over a barrel in terms of any kind of extension that he could potentially sign with Philadelphia. So I don't know if it's good business for them. I would go look for someone cheaper. And what would the return be anyway?
Stop there for a second, Murray. I presume it would be draft picks. Okay, I presume. But before you get to that, let me just ask Matt. Matt, would you trade Tooney?
If we're talking about high draft picks, yes, I would. Because, you know, if you can't sign him to a long-term deal. I think guards are a dime a dozen. As good as Tooney is and as important as I think it is as it is for the Patriots to improve their play up front this year, I would trade him, yes.
If they were to give you a two, which I mean, that's really high, then yeah. But I don't think you're going to get that out of Philadelphia, like a second-round draft pick. So I'm a no. I just don't think the return would be that good, and I don't see from a financial standpoint how they could do it. Philadelphia, I mean.
So this is the next question I was going to ask you, is what type of return do you think you could get, and what would entice you to make the deal? And we don't have a lot to go on in this sort of thing. I mean, I'm trying to stay inside of Patriots history, not that that is the most relevant thing. But Logan Mankins, I think, had 1 year left in his contract when the Patriots traded him to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. Mankins, like Tooney, a left guard. And if I'm not mistaken, I should have looked this up, but naturally I didn't, because that would have required actual show prep and research, Murray. And, you know, heaven forbid that I actually do something like that, at least to the full degree that I should have done it.
Well, summer's here, Mass.
Yeah. So my recollection with Mankins, though, is that they got, remember that backup tight end, Tim Wright?
Tim Wright. Yeah, yeah.
It was Tim Wright and I think like a fourth round pick.
It was a fourth. You're right, Mass.
Okay. So you're talking about a mid-round selection and a backup tight end. And again, Mankins was high paid for his position at the time. He was making about $10 million a year. He's one of the highest paid guards in the league. Tooney is now one of the highest paid guards in the league, and it's only on 1 year. And so now Mankins was a little bit older than Tooney, certainly, mm-hmm. So it's not total apples to apples. But a fourth and a backup tight end, I'm not doing it. Now, Tooney was drafted in the third round. You tell me you can get a second-round pick for him. And again, Philly, in all likelihood, will be mid to late. I mean, I don't know that they're going to be a Super Bowl winner next year. There's certainly that chance, I suppose, but I don't think they're going to suck. So you're probably looking at a pick somewhere around 50, call it, maybe even a little bit later. If I could get that, I think I would do it. I just think that the guy's overpaid. And it's not because I don't think he's a good player, but I'm not paying that for. I'm not paying him and Shaq Mason at guard. Let me just give you another scenario as I think about it. What about Mason? Would you trade Mason at right guard if a team came calling?
Again, it depends what the return is, but I'm more willing to listen because of the down year he had last year.
I think
so.
Mason,
let's say you could get, let's just call it a third round pick.
Yeah. So say, all right, like say Philadelphia says even a fourth. So we'll base it on the Mankins deal. They, even though you're now maybe stacked at tight end or you have more depth there because of the two that you selected in the draft, but they say Dallas Goedert in a fourth round pick for Shaq Mason. I think I do that deal.
Too much. You won't get that.
I know, but I'm just saying hypothetically.
McCarthy?
I think Mason's a different story because he's under contract, and I think he dealt with injuries last year, which is the reason for his, you know, subpar play by his standards. I thought he got better in the final few weeks, so I actually I I count on a bounce back for Mason, and also you've made a long-term investment in him, whereas Tooney, you might have one more year and he's gone.
I just think the Patriots are overpaying their guards. That's all. Now, look, maybe Belichick's strategy here is we're going to be deep and good on the offensive line. I question whether they're either, but we'll see. Maybe he'll be right. Maybe Mason and Cannon bounce back on the right side. Maybe Isaiah Wynn is good, and with Andrews back, maybe that group is actually good. I don't know. You know, again, I sort of made fun of Bedard about this. He thinks that they had the chance to be one of the best offensive lines in the league. I don't know that that it'll go that way. I don't know if it'll be quite that good, but they could be above average. And if it's the strength of the offense, that could make a big difference in terms of what they're able to do, especially with a young quarterback. Let's just slip in a quick call or two. Steven's in the car on MLB. Go ahead, Steven.
Hey, Tony, regarding baseball being out of touch, they haven't even considered it. That young people, and I think Jim touched on this as far as like what people are going through with pandemic and how much money everybody's not making. People have been cutting the cord left and right, you know, and not paying the $200 that includes the Nesson package. And there's so many options out there. You have Netflix, you have this, you have that, you have everything else.
Million
they
things.
Haven't even considered that part of it, let alone the money that's going to drop off from the national and local TV.
Okay, Steven, look, they whiffed. They whiffed. It's a PR nightmare, PR disaster for baseball in the league. All I'm telling you is this. It's not the first time, and I do think they did damage to the sport. I'm not telling you that they haven't. I think the bigger reason that it's doing damage, though, is that the product sucks. So you add this on top of it is, okay, your product sucks. Now you've pissed me off and insulted me, and you want me to come back? Forget it. Like, so, but I think if the product were better, that people would ultimately get over this negotiation. What do they say, Murray? Isn't there, so maybe McCarthy knows, isn't there some expression like the human brain can't feel pain? Is there something like that, that you don't remember pain, which is why when people have these accidents and stuff, these traumatic episodes, they never remember them because the brain blocks them out?
I'll take your word for it. I don't know if I don't recall hearing that. Then again, my brain is now mush.
Maz, do you think I know anything like that? No, there's a reason I'm doing this and not doing something better and more important. That's for sure.
Okay, so what I'm telling you is, and the owners and the players, they sort of bank on this. Once they start playing games again and you start watching the games, you'll start watching again if you like baseball. You will. You will. You'll tell me now you won't. You're pissed off, and you might even be pissed off a little bit into the season. But if you really like the game, you'll come back. If the product sucks, you won't. Like, to me, that is sort of something different. In any case, I've babbled on enough about this all day. I'm sure you guys are tired of listening to me, too. So, final word. Don't go anywhere. Final word is next.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Looking for the best deal on tires? There's only one place to go, Town Fair Tire. The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire.
Nobody.
Nobody.
Nope.
All right, so a friend of the show, Mad Dog Russo, of course, is always on around Super Bowl time. It's always one of the must-listen-to moments of Super Bowl week. He, as we know, is a big baseball fan, and he has had some thoughts on baseball in recent days and the state of baseball. Reds pitcher Trevor Bauer has also had some thoughts and has been pretty outspoken about the state of the game. But Mad Dog doesn't want to hear it from him.
Then Bauer, is it what he does?
Well, they don't.
We go Bauer. You want me to go Bauer? Am I better at what I do than Bauer, is it what he does?
They did cut your
Let me hear an answer. Let me hear an answer.
You get a raise after
Let
that.
Me hear it. Let me hear an answer. Let me hear an answer. Am I a better talk show? You've known me for 12 years. You've seen Bauer pitch plenty of times. Am I better at what I do than he is at what he does?
Oh, yes. That's not a question.
That's all.
Yes.
That's all I want to hear. And by the way, I don't want to hear how difficult it is. Doing this show is as hard as doing what he does. All the things that you have to do as a host to make the show a compact, concise, listenable, peppy show, I know how to do it. Let's leave it at that. And I know how to do it better than most. And I can do that job better than Trevor Bauer can pitch. I can guarantee you that. Radio, talk shows, since 1983. I will put that accomplishment from 83 to today to anything a current player has done in baseball. 37 years doing this. 37 years. With, at 60 years old, still certainly have listeners. 37 years. High level, top performance. A show that is as good as I can make it with help from Eddie and Bill Zimmerman and the rest of the crew. 37 years. And I got to listen to, I got to listen to Trevor Plouffe today. Tell me I don't know anything about radio. Are you kidding me? Did he do Dave 37 times? We'll take a timeout. We continue. Mad Dog Unleashed.
Was so he ever on Letterman? I guess I never knew that. That's what he was referring
to? Was he talking about Trevor Plouffe or Trevor Bauer?
I think he was talking. He was initially talking about Trevor Bauer, and then he switched it up to Trevor Plouffe. But hey, you know, Mad Dog's on a higher plane, as he
How
established.
How old did Mad Dog say he is? What did he say?
60.
He's in his 60s?
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't have guessed that Mad Dog was that old.
Hold on. Let's look this up.
He's in his 60s, huh?
He is 60. He'll be 61 in October.
Oh, no kidding. Well, I have to wish him a happy birthday then. We have a similar
zodiac sign,
me and Mad Dog.
I'm a fan and all, but listing your resume on the air.
Yeah, it's a little much. I agree with you, Mari.
I get that you're fired up, but come on, man.
You know who would do that, dare I say?
Oh, his old
Francesa.
His old partner.
Oh, yeah.
That's who I expect.
Francesa would do that.
That's
Francesa has done it.
Yeah, that's who I expect that from. He's done it a million times before. To callers.
The pant load Francesa would have done that, which is always why I like Mad Dog better. I mean, so again, I agree. Reading your resume on the air, not exactly the best thing to do.